adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised. Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew.
Loveline, coast to coast.
Hey, everybody. It's the Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Dr. Drew, board certified physician, addiction medicine specialist. The great Pat O'Brien has joined us tonight.
A smattering of applause. I like that.
Pat from Access Hollywood, of course. I looked down and said Pat joined the show in 1997. So 5 years since Pat O'Brien has been on Access Hollywood. It's amazing because to me you were this sort of late arrival.
Right.
But you've actually, the show was probably only on 3 years before you got there.
No, maybe a year and a half.
Couple years it started, and then I got there, and boy, did it take off after I got there.
I'll tell you, is worthless as those shows are, I watch them almost every night. I always happen to be around a TV.
Was that a compliment? I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, it was. It was.
As worthless as
my job is.
I always happen to be around a TV at that time, and I love to hear what Julia Roberts was wearing, what happened to Lyle Lovett's leg. All the, you know, who died, who won the Golden Globe, and Pat brings a lot of energy and vitality to it.
You know, for a lot of people, hi guys, how are you?
Good to see you, Pat.
For a lot of people, those shows are guilty pleasures.
Mm-hmm.
We changed ours so it becomes sort of your news necessity in that area every night. And that's how people have responded to our show. And then it's more like an entertainment news show than it is like some of the other ones who slow people down in slow motion and say they're dying of something or whatever. But I love it. I'm having a lot of fun. I thought I'd never get over doing sports, and I thought I'd never get over being at the big game. But I'm really having fun.
I don't know how the ratings break down, and we live in Los Angeles and make our living in the industry, at least Drew used to. But how do the ratings vary from, I'm guessing, you know, New York and L.A. are about the same, but in the middle of the country, are they more interested or less interested?
No, I'll tell you, in Columbus, we get our highest rating in Columbus, Ohio.
Really?
It's an NBC O&O station.
And that is, Columbus is sort of ground zero America, right?
Yeah, highest rating. America. Like the night after the Oscars, we got a 12 rating there, which is in access time, phenomenal, okay? In New York, does that mean they don't understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, we do. Anderson, the engineer, doesn't know, pushes the buttons.
In New York, we got a 9 the night after Oscars in L.A. Or in L.A., we got a 9. In New York, we got a 7, which are phenomenal numbers. And if you had those every night, you'd be, you know,
put it this way. I just talked to some MTV folks who were elated that when Jimmy and I did our MTV Spring Break thing that aired a week ago, we got a 1.4.
Well, but that's cable ratings. 6. If you get a 1 in cable, you're golden. I mean, I remember I did that show, How'd They Do That in Cable?
Right.
And we got a 0.9 rating. And I'm used to, in sports, you know, 8, 9, 10s, 12s, and this. And we got a 0.9 rating and baskets of food and flowers and blankets and leather jackets. And I said, what is this? In the cable world, you're a god.
If you get into the whole numbers, I mean, if you just get out of the tents, it's huge. Huge. Well, anyway, so Pat, I guess the answer is people in the middle of the country enjoy this news as much, if not more, than they do in the cities where the news is made.
Yeah, I think people in L.A. watch it. I know most of the celebrities watch it because I hear one way or another from a lot of them about it. I think out here they watch it because they're in the business, they're in L.A., it's part of the deal here, and the L.A. Times really doesn't cover Hollywood. In the Midwest, it is a huge guilty pleasure.
Right.
And it is a way to live vicariously through these people that, you know, these tabloid magazines sell bigger in the Midwest than they do out here. So people watch for different reasons, but I love doing it. It's fun.
Well, Pat has a lovely home, and he's nice enough to invite us to his Christmas party every year.
I was just thinking, last time I saw Pat, and Pat's got a 14-year-old son, and he had about 8 of his friends over, and Adam and Jimmy were surrounded by the 14-year-olds. I think you were fart humor. Or,
they love the gas humor.
Or you had a poopoo cushion, whoopee cushion or something.
Plus, there's some heavy hitters there. They just walk right by, you know.
Yeah.
You had a fart box, a fart machine.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. No, they had.
I think you were bigger than
kids.
I think you were bigger than Meatloaf one year.
Yeah. I mean, not in stature, but in the eyes of your young kids.
Emotionally.
That was when he was 12. That was when Sean was playing, to be fair.
I want you to know.
He's going down.
I want you to know what a class act Jimmy Kimmel is, by the way, Pat, which is we were driving there, me and my girlfriend and Jimmy and his wife, and we just got off the freeway exit to get over to Pat's house, and Jimmy, in a panic, said, "Oh, my God, we didn't bring anything." And I said, "Don't sweat it. This is my third year. You just slide in, hand the Mexican chick your coat, and head for the bar." And he's like, "Oh, no, we got to get him something." And I said, "You know, we're an hour late. It's 9:45 at night. Pat's loaded by now. He's not going to know if we bring anything. And by the way, if we do walk in, it's not like Pat's going to be standing by the door.
Waiting
Pat's going to be in the back, smoking a joint. We'll slide right in. We're going to slide right in."
Sean, turn your radio off right now.
So he goes, "No, we got to pull over to the Gelson's and get him some wine. You wait in the car." I'm like, "Oh, Jesus, this is horrible." He goes into the Gelson's. He comes out like 20 minutes later. He goes, we got him a bottle of wine." I said, "Oh, Jesus, how much?" $85. I said, "Are you high? I don't even like Pat." He's like, I said, "All right, what do you want, $40? He said, "No, we both bought him an $85. I was like, "Are you kidding me? Jesus
Christ. I remember
Christ.
You guys did bring some good groceries to that.
Yeah, so they handed it to me. I paid him like $100 because all I had was ATM money. And we gave it to Pat. Pat didn't even look at it. He just threw it at the bar.
You know, I think that party, not to obsess over my own parties, that party is a great vibe because there's lots of different kinds of people there. And
yes.
Sit around and
it is a good time.
It's different times of night, different years.
Yeah.
It changes.
Yes, Pat has a lovely, lovely home with a very high ceiling, which is nice when you walk into a home, especially where throwing a party. And then everyone just proceeds to get loaded and eat good food and listen to good music. And
it's
very nice.
It's a way to live. It's a good way to live.
I think it would be the way. Tim?
Yeah.
You're 22.
Yes, I am.
What's up?
Got a quick question. I know it's going to sound stupid, but it is serious.
Well, okay.
I understand the purpose for hair down below in the front. What the hell's the deal with hair between the cheeks?
Yeah, Drew, what is that?
From an evolutionary standpoint, you're asking.
Yeah. Is it more scent? More scent?
What the hell is it doing there?
Yeah, what is it doing there, Drew?
I can't think of any adaptive use for it. Maybe it's slowly, you know, as this stuff sort of evolves out of our biology, maybe it hangs out in certain places just because of the way this stuff is being removed from our system. You know, I mean, the way we're evolving.
Well, was you're
without
saying
an adaptive
that
advantage,
man was covered with hair at a certain point,
and we're just losing it.
And the hair's been coming out slowly over the years.
Yeah.
And this may be when the last place.
Maybe there's something about the warmth and wetness, you know, under an arm. Who knows? There may be something like that.
But then, how come you don't have it between your fingers?
Well, that's always open to the air, though. That's
well, Jewish girls do, but us guys, we don't.
I don't know. I don't have a good answer. Somebody, I'm sure.
Or in your gums. It's warm and wet there.
Well, under the arms is a scent thing, right?
That's what people say, but I'm not sure if that's even necessarily true.
Oh, Tim, I don't know how you're doing in that department, but I got enough for you if you're running short.
In the ass, sir.
Yeah.
No, I got plenty. It takes half a roll just to get that damn place clean.
I know. It's really bad when you pull the toilet paper up and it looks like a chia pet.
That's like a
tribble.
Adam has described it like taking peanut butter out of shag carpet.
It is a disaster down there. I mean, it's the Italian heritage. It's good most of the time, but it's a disaster down below. Rick?
Yes.
You're 28?
Yes.
What's
How
up?
How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I just had a quick comment about a show that you guys had on a day or two ago.
Mm. All right.
Adam, you're displeased with the porn you're watching. There's too much dialogue. You're hollering at your television set.
I was displeased when I got a retrospective on John Holmes' life, and the opening scene was a guy in a mock-up of a graveyard talking to a tombstone of John Holmes.
That's right.
I thought, this is going to be difficult to get on track with. I'm looking at the guy's tombstone.
Too much high drama at the beginning?
I don't like to mix my death with pornography.
Right.
I like to remember John as he lived.
All right.
Not as the guy who died of AIDS in prison.
I believe you buffer your commentary when Pat's around, too. Get on track with the porn. Very nice. Nice euphemism.
I have a lot of respect for Pat.
No, you have respect, Pat. I can assure you that was not
I listen. I'm a listener. So.
Get on track. Wow.
Why, Rick, what is your comment about
that? What I was wondering about that was, I do have a serious comment, but I'm wondering, after all that was over with, were you still able to track one off for yourself? Or did you
of course.
Off and
track one off.
Of course.
Track off, yes.
And,
absolutely.
All right.
It was just difficult when the guy was talking to a foam rubber gravestone talking about how John was a legend.
By the way, speaking of John Holmes, Milton Berle.
Oh yeah. Now, what about Milton Berle and that legendary unit of his? Do you have any stories? I mean, at a certain point, I just wonder if it's just sort of myth perpetuating myth.
Like, I think it got to be a bigger myth. It tracked a bigger myth than it was. But we always heard that he had a very large member.
And he played it right.
I don't know how you hear that. I mean, why does it come up?
I don't know how that works, but he played it just right. And it's the same way I would play it if that myth got started about me, which is, come on, fellas, I don't want to talk about this again. Do you know what I mean? He was always slightly perturbed and slightly angered that people brought this up, and it played it just right, as if it was true, and he was tired of talking about it.
Well, I did the, Miss USA or something, I judged in that a year and a half ago, and one of the Baldwin brothers was up there with me. Not Alec, not Stephen.
Daniel. Jesus Christ, they're really scraping the barrel.
I know, me and
you
Daniel.
And Daniel Baldwin.
Nice, but listen, Daniel Baldwin said he was at a poker game and he swore, and it was sort of a serious discussion with Martha Stewart sitting there.
Right.
You know,
At a poker game, Donald Trump was
these were all people sitting having this discussion very seriously. He wasn't joking around. And he said, he went up to me. He said, look, we've heard about this. You keep, you brush it off. But I need, just please tell me. He says he actually exposed himself.
Really?
And that there was quite an experience, apparently.
And he was in his late 80s at this point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because he died at, what was he?
93.
So he.
You know that in 1947, do we care about this, Stan?
Yeah, we do.
In 1947, there were 17 television stations in this country.
Wow.
That means 17, towers.
Mm-hmm.
And 136,000 TV sets. Okay? Milton Berle goes on in that year, and then 1 year later, 1948, there were 50 TV stations and 700,000 sets.
Think of because of that show?
Because of Milton Berle.
Wow. Really?
And he was getting an 80, and I realized there wasn't a lot on, but he was getting an 80 rating.
Wow.
An 80 rating.
Wow. And we were, we're ecstatic with 1.1 on the
point
cable.
Yeah.
Brandy, or Randy?
Yes.
You're 17?
Yeah, 1 second. Let me get outside.
I love the sound effects.
Did
so
they say let me
great.
Get off? Or?
Yeah.
I expect to hear the horse.
Yeah, the Lone
horse.
Ranger.
Yeah.
Hmm, Tonto.
Hey, Randy?
Randy?
Oh, he went outside and left the phone inside.
Well, where's he going?
He said, I don't know, let me get outside here.
Well, he's back now.
No. That was him hanging up.
Oh, is that him hanging up?
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk to Kevin, his 21. Kevin?
Yeah, I got kind of a comment about the whole butt crack hair thing. I'm sorry, a human sexuality class, I learned that, hair between your ass crack really works kind of as a friction reducer. You don't get chafed because, it allows for a lot more movement.
Well, it also causes something called a pilonidal cyst, which pilonidal literally translated means nest of hair. And right up at the top, where you're at the top of the... The hair can sort of burrow into the skin there and create a big cyst tract.
Well, wait a minute. That's an interesting point, which is you have hair under your arms where your arms sort of move to and fro.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that hair is there, some sort of lubricant
maybe,
almost?
Maybe.
but there's nothing behind your knees, although you wouldn't really need it there.
Elbow,
that's a different kind of movement.
Kind of movement, nothing else has this kind of movement, the sliding.
Well, there is hair wherever there's that kind of movement, is there? Mm-hmm. Where, on your face?
Your face and a head, no. What do you have body hair, though. Why would you have it here, then?
On your chest?
Yeah.
I don't know. Pat, any thoughts? Pat, you're not a hairy. Or are you a hairy guy?
No. You're telling me you're supposed to have hair below your waist? I don't know why. I would. First of all, I've never really thought about this.
That's probably a good thing.
Have you?
No.
Yeah, we have.
A little bit.
Not
quite as explicitly as this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would think I'm still concerned between your toes, because that's moist and wet.
Yeah, why not between the toes, Drew?
But now we're starting to say maybe it's friction.
All right. Oh, listen.
Maybe it's surfaces that move.
I'm done thinking about this. Rick?
Yes.
You're 28?
Yes.
Rick had a follow-up.
That's right.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. I'm wondering, this is my real question, if you guys would consider me to have a drinking problem.
Go.
And the only reason why I've been thinking about this lately, every day I drink.
Well, let's define what alcoholism is, and then you can just decide whether or not you measure up to that.
Okay.
A, you need to see some evidence of a genetic history, some family history. Two, some element of denial, some disconnect between the use and its consequences. And then evidence of progressive use in the face of adverse consequence. So in spite of something happening in work, school, relationships, finance, health, legal circumstances, there's still a progressivity to your relationship with the substance, and grandpa was an alcoholic, and you're sort of denying much of the consequence, that's it.
Okay.
Or minimizing or intellectualizing, that's all denial.
Is that going on, Rick?
Well, is that kind of like saying, okay, well, today I'm going to try not to drink, and, you know, like kind of testing yourself to see if you can get, you know, without doing it?
Well, what alcoholics tend, well, that's a feature of people who meet the criteria for that disease. They tend to make deals with themselves and,
mm-hmm.
you know, have to really work. And not somebody who does not have a biological drive doesn't have a drive, so you don't have to really make deals with yourself. There's no sort of impulse there.
Well, how much do you drink?
Well, see, I don't get totally wasted, but how much do I drink? Whiskey and Coke. I drink usually 3 to 4 of them a night, and I buy the 1.75 liter whiskey.
Well, again, alcoholism is a progressive disease, and early on people don't drink a lot, and later on they drink a lot.
Well, how long does it take you to get through the 1.75?
4 or 5 days.
Why you ask? Doesn't matter.
I know, but you always say that, Drew, but I think it is a factor.
No, it's in terms of determining if somebody has advanced or severe disease, yes, or somebody needs treatment, yes. But if somebody has the predisposition, is on the road of the progression of this disease.
And if I don't have it, if I run low and I don't have it in my fridge, I have to go to the store and buy it, just like I feel like there's a security that's there.
What time do you start drinking?
When I get home from work.
Well, just trust me, you're an alcoholic.
No, you're getting it.
Just trust me.
Yeah, what a surprise Drew would label you an alcoholic. Shocking.
Yeah.
If you had a shot of Robitussin twice a year, Drew would label you an alcoholic.
Adam is a living proof of denial here speaking.
How dare you? How dare you? I'll cut back on my red wine.
What about the people that drink Niagara Falls and never seem to have a problem? What are those people?
There are such things as very heavy drinkers that are not alcoholics.
Right.
Just such a thing. Those are heavy drinkers.
I think that may be us, Pat. Yeah, buddy. Yeah. We're not alcoholics. We're just heavy drinkers.
That's right.
No big deal.
There's abuse, then there's addiction. Addiction is very simple. You either can stop or you can't.
Right.
And if you don't have the biology there, you don't have the gene, you can control it, you can stop. Okay.
The greatest thing I ever did in my life, besides the obvious things,
I stopped smoking. Yeah.
I smoked. You didn't know me when I smoked. I smoked 3 packs of Marlboro Reds a day.
Wow.
Really?
I mean, I loved to smoke. And in 1990, I stopped.
And you smoked starting at what age?
I started smoking right after college. It was 20 years I smoked.
Was it hard?
You know what? I got some great advice from somebody, I forget who it was, on an airplane as I was coming home. He had just quit smoking. It was somebody like, I can't remember who it was, who said, you've got to take up an activity that you put as much energy into that as you did smoking. So I started working out and running in that.
Mm-hmm.
And, in the past, how long is 1990? That'd be 10 to 12 years. I got a couple of cigarettes here and there.
Ooh.
But not like, I mean, I cannot believe that I did that. To this
day. Three packs a day.
Three Reds.
Wow.
Three packs of Red Marlboros a day, and I loved it. Every single one of them. And I just went, because the charm was two at that time, so I wanted to quit. But
yeah, most people couldn't do that.
Isn't that weird, though?
Packs.
Well, it distinguishes between who's somebody who's dependent on nicotine, who really likes it, and somebody who's addicted. You're not addicted. You can stop. The addicts are the ones that smoke through their tracheostomies, smoke in the coronary care units. They can't, even when there's severe consequences.
Mm.
That's addiction.
They had a friend who had a heart attack
and
lit up a cigarette in the emergency
right.
room.
That's addiction. That's an
that's
alcoholic.
That's a problem.
But he's an alcoholic. That's what that is. Yeah, that's how alcoholics behave.
But to this day, there's not a sign. I did an MRI on my lungs. You can't tell that I ever had a cigarette.
Is that MRI worked? Can you do an MRI on your lungs?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Good time.
Go.
Did you put your head in that MRI thing? Was that I did? I did that MRI thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I almost went nuts.
Yeah.
It's crazy. No one get an MRI.
I pretend I'm listening to Limp Bizkit with the noise.
Well, it's mildly better. Marginally. Mark?
Yep.
You're 51?
I bet I am.
You got a story about Uncle Milty's penis?
Well, Uncle Milty, you know, before you drift too far away from that topic, he and Forrest Tucker were both renowned for their legendary endowments.
Yes.
And Uncle Milty's agent was going to set up what amounted to a dick-off between the two guys. And he told Uncle Milty, only take out enough to win. That's a true story.
Did you see it?
Yeah, it's a true story.
It's a true story. It's Hollywood legend.
Well, it's a true story that his agent may have been screwing around with him, made a joke.
No, but I mean...
They actually had the competition...
Yes.
Okay, and so...
No, I don't think they had the competition, but I think that's what he told him to do. Milton
I know. His agent, who probably didn't ever say this, but if he did, could have told him that, but he could have just been having a laugh.
Don't you want to believe that story?
Yes, yes, I do. You know, I know Forrest Tucker's kid, actually.
Well, Forrest Tucker called
He drywalled my house, actually.
Oh, wow. He did?
Yeah. Alcoholic golfer. Crazy.
Milton Berle never had a drink either.
Interesting.
He didn't? Never drank. Never knew what
beer or wine. I've always been telling our listeners, you don't smoke pot, don't drink, your penis will be huge.
Yeah.
And work beautiful.
What an incentive.
That's the point.
All right. Let's I want to talk to this guy before we go to break.
Right.
Peter?
Yeah?
You had a homosexual experience and now you're feeling guilt and shame?
Yeah, I am, sort of. It's just like, I've been pretty much straight. Like my teen years, and recently I decided to have a homosexual experience because of a coworker.
Because of a coworker?
It's an unbelievable story.
What do you mean because of a coworker?
Well, a coworker recently just came out, and I kind of want to come out earlier because when he came out, he had a wife and two kids, and he like really damaged them, and I don't want to do that.
Okay, so you know you're gay.
I'm not sure.
You think you might be gay?
Yes.
And you want to be sure before you've gotten a heterosexual relationship?
Who'd you have the homosexual experience with?
I was at a club, and I just picked out a random guy that I thought was attractive.
Was it a gay club?
Yeah.
Boy, it must be easy pickings at those places. Could you imagine it's a bunch of drunken gay guys? Oh, my God.
I'm laughing.
You have sex with everybody, right?
Maybe.
All right, and so you're gay, you're just having a little difficulty coping with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly the fact that now my ass is a...
I thought bogus the second he called.
Really?
It's unbelievable.
But then he sounds so depressed, I can't.
Yeah, well, Drew, you should have piped up.
But I thought he's too depressed, maybe there's something really here. Oh.
Yeah, he did sound like he's in a quandary.
Kind of in the middle there.
All right. No, that's all right. Like I said, look, I have no problem with the bogus calls because I do not have to fix a certain percentage of you or even hear a certain percentage of you. All I have to do is be here between 10 and midnight and then I go home. That's what I love about this job.
That's what you should love about this country.
He means no prep for the show. And nothing goes home.
What I mean is like when I was a carpenter, I had to finish the job.
Right.
I couldn't just leave when it was time to leave because if something wasn't right or I miscalculated something or screwed something up, or something didn't work out, I had to finish it. But with this job, we leave at midnight every night, and I love that.
Just walk away.
You just walk away. I mean, there's some nights we do shows that I don't think we help anyone. There's been nights when I've been in here where I've been a little drunk.
Have we signed in a commercial break yet? Oh, we're still on the air. Okay.
Yeah, we're still on the air. Okay. See, that's my point. We don't even know when we're on the air.
Okay.
That's the beauty of this show. Out at midnight. Fantastic.
You walk out into a lonely, dark, empty street.
I know, but
does that ever bother you?
No.
It's his life that's empty and dark.
It's still my
problem. Well, it was a metaphor.
Pat O'Brien, everybody. We'll take ourselves a little break. We'll be right back. Everybody, it's Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Pat O'Brien is our guest tonight. Access Hollywood is where you can find him 5 days a week, maybe a little bit more. I seem to notice that there's some reruns going on the weekends.
No, the weekend's a fresh show, a rerun from a couple stories during the week. It's been an interesting week because I had the Oscars earlier in the week.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then I just came from Tommy Lee. This afternoon.
Oh, with the whole hepatitis
thing?
Well,
we didn't do that. We actually did a music story with him. He's got a new CD coming out. And then tomorrow I'm going to be with Ozzy.
Why not the hepatitis thing, though?
Well,
come on.
We've been through that.
All right.
And tomorrow I'm going to be with Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh, yeah.
Who's the hottest thing in television right now.
Hang on.
Well, no, I really don't.
A hermit.
See, Ozzy for me is a poster child for what can happen to me. He's too many drugs.
Well, he is.
And he's a great guy, by the way, but living, breathing proof of that.
Well, I'm telling you, Drew, we were on that show, The Osbournes, last week or the week before.
They came in here and filmed when he was on the show.
Yeah, I'm addicted to that show.
Greatest show. I mean, it's just, why didn't we think of that? There aren't many people you could do that show with.
I know.
Tommy Lee, I suggested to Tommy, he might be a candidate for that kind of a show.
Yeah, but see, Ozzy has these crazy kids and his crazy wife and the whole thing.
Hates his dog.
Yeah.
Dogs, I mean, the whole thing that I think's compelling about it and funny and true about it is this guy's the, you know, rock and roll's bad boy with the biting the heads off the doves and making the millions of dollars. And then you see him in his house. And he has a Shih Tzu that's running him ragged. The kids, the nanny, the dogs. Then a dog psychologist comes
in. Cartoon
and the poor guy's just walking in circles, paying for everything. And meanwhile, all he wants to do is get a decent nap in on the sofa, and it can't be done.
Right.
So it no matter what level you're on, your family is still kicking your ass. That is sort of the message.
You had some insights about Halle Berry, maybe.
What were my Halle Berry
insights?
She seems nuts to me. She seems like she's getting progressively nuttier.
No, I think...
No, you don't think so?
I know her pretty well.
You do?
I think she's pretty normaled out.
Doesn't it seem...
I think she's settled into a life that she's finally really liking.
My God, she just seems like she's going insane.
Did you see Monsters Ball?
No, I didn't see that.
I hear it's fantastic.
Unbelievably fantastic.
Yeah, I gotta see it. Yeah.
And a lesson about racism and tolerance and pain and desperation.
Yeah, I heard it's so painful. I'm not sure if I can sit through it. It's
incredible. When these actors start crying and saying they're so proud to be actors,
I think that's more of a release.
It seems a little weird.
Yeah, I think that's more of a release of emotions that have been pent up.
Right, but they should do that at home. That's all I'm saying.
How do you know they don't? How do you know I don't do that at home?
I'm sure you do. Over one of my $85 bottles of wine that Kimmel forced me to buy you. Jamie?
Yeah, what's up?
Please, don't give that away as a present, Pat. Promise me. I know
I
re-gifted that all the time.
Did I give you a bottle of wine going out, Doc?
You had an $85 little tag on it. But
Is it from Gelson's and Encino? Jamie?
It's from Gelson's.
You're 20. What's up?
Yeah. My ex-girlfriend, she's German. We were together for 2 years, and I moved back to Florida. I lived over in Berlin for 2 years. I moved back to Florida.
What were you doing over there?
Learning the language, visiting her family, making friends.
So you met her over here?
Yeah.
And then you went over there with her?
And then we went over there.
And why did you come back without her?
Because she has to finish school. School over there lasts 13 years, and I had just finished college.
How old is she?
Not college, but high school.
How old is she?
She's 20 also.
How you doing?
School lasts 13 years, starting from the first grade?
From, well, Sorry, from the first grade, right? He has 13 years of school.
So it's one more grade than ours at last 12?
That last year kind of sets them up for college and everything. It's called, they get like an abitur when they're finished, and then they can go
get
to
a what?
Abitur.
Oh, an abitur.
Yeah.
Oh, why didn't you say so?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, listen. It's what the hell's an abitur?
Basically, they could go to any university they want to.
All right. Listen, I sit. Hold on a second. I'm just got a riff here. All I do is hear about people talking about how great the educational system is in Japan and Europe and Western Europe, how great the health care is in Canada, how great everything is everywhere. Why do we kick the crap out of these countries every 40 years or so? Do you know what I mean? They're so smart. They're so well taken care of. They're so evolved. And once every twice a century, we got to go over there and give them a good ass whooping. Now, how does that work so consistently? Why are our bombs so much better? Why is our military so much more advanced? Why do we kick their ass all over the continent? Do you know what I'm saying? I think we get a little over-glorified with that stuff.
I don't like
all that stuff with the parents. Oh, in Japan, the parents never leave. The kids never leave. They revere their parents, and they stay at home, and everyone loves each other. Really, why do they commit suicide all the time over there? And they're killing rhinos so they can get a boner. Really? Are they that evolved? Why is every other country so great? Do you know what I'm saying? Thank you.
I think your thing was, why do people come here?
Yeah, there's another
thing.
They
leave those countries.
Why does the entire world flee their utopia with the great education and the great health care and the way they revere the elderly? Why does everyone haul their ass over to this country with nothing but what they can pack in a duffel bag?
Right, Starbucks.
All right. Oh, is that what it is? Where's this guy, Drew? What line is he on? I can't find him now. One?
Oh, we got the German guy, six.
Yeah. I think I'm done with him.
Yeah.
What is he asking, though, Jamie?
What is the question?
My question is, should I get her back over here? Because she finishes school in July. Adam, I'm not glorifying her. The school's over there.
No, he's not picking on you.
It's all right there, buddy.
I'm a worldly guy, you know. I speak three languages, you know, and I see things differently than the typical American. Obviously, differently, more differently than you do.
How's that?
Talk about this. How's that?
Yeah.
I'm not too big on the whole, kicking everybody's ass idea. That's kind of a stupidity talking.
No, I know. We don't.
You're going back to your caveman age.
Pansy. Yeah, but listen.
Pansy.
Listen to me. Who started World War II?
Okay, Germany.
Yeah, and Japan.
Right.
Who started World War I?
Germany.
Yeah, there you go. We only kick their ass when they attempt to kick our ass, and then we go over there and kick their ass. So
right.
So why? You know the thing. Hold on a second. How dare you? You know, this country gets a lot of crap for finishing off bullies as if we'd started the fight. You know what I mean? It's like we're walking through the campus, some big drunken bully comes up, beats up a couple of underclassmen, then takes a swing at us, then we kick that bully's ass, and it's like, oh, you guys starting trouble again. No, it was the guy who beat the crap out of Poland, France, and England, who then tried to take a swing at us, who then we kicked their ass. Do you know what I mean? We didn't start that. All right, I'm done with this, Jamie.
That kind of reminded me of Elvis. He had that girlfriend sound. And Elvis song.
Retarded Elvis. Jamie.
Hey.
Go back to Russia, man.
Russia.
Yeah. I miss Russia.
Here's the deal.
Is Russia even exist anymore? Yeah, I used to like yelling at people to go back to Russia.
You miss the Soviet Union is what you miss.
Yeah, but that doesn't work either. Go back to the Soviet. Go back to Russia.
Listen, Jamie, you just finished telling us how your girlfriend was being set up for the university. Let her finish her training. She's not here. I mean, so the fact that she's not here speaks volumes about your relationship. You know, she's not here. There's no reason for that, I think.
I would reckon that Jamie would not do real well with the American girls. That's just a guess of mine. Renee?
Yes.
You're 25?
Yes.
You want Drew's opinion on the new IUDs?
Yeah, I just had a quick question. I was wanting to change from birth control to, and was looking for something that wasn't quite as hormonal, and was wanting to get his opinion on that.
Well, they look good on paper. I just have sort of an aversion to IUDs because I was in training and lived through my early practice years all the disasters that IUDs caused in people that had not had children. It caused a lot of infection of the upper parts of the genital track the tubes and cause fertility problems.
What's different about the new ones?
They're not as irritating. Just completely different. They have totally different side effects. They're not as irritating. They're different. And they look good on paper, and I wouldn't discourage someone from it. It's just I myself am not. I don't get behind it real strongly.
How do they get them in there? Compressed air, blowgun, slingshot,
blowgun. There's a big long tube.
I've actually never seen one on paper. Have you?
No, I've never actually.
Do they look good on? When they look it up.
Sure, are they physically on paper, or is it just data?
It's a report, just a data.
I see. And don't they look like one of those AIDS ribbons or something? What is their shape?
Different. I think now they're T's.
Oh, they're T-shaped? Yeah. And are they copper? Were they copper before?
Jeez, they were at one time a copper T, but now they've been pregnant with hormones.
Wouldn't you say this is safe to say, and Pat, you know your way around the IUDs as well.
Right.
They had some problems with these things 20 years ago. They would not bring them back unless they really got all the bugs worked out of them.
That's a good point.
Well, when you say so. So, yeah. Renee, probably a good thing at this point.
You remember those cliff divers?
That would
dive off the cliffs in 4 feet of water.
Yeah. Right.
I once did the world championship cliff diving live. And I asked the guy, the world champion, the first time you did this, how did you know you could do it?
Mm-hmm.
And I say the same thing about IUDs. The first person who had one, how did she know it was going to work?
Yeah, how did that work, Drew?
How do they test them, I guess, I was trying to be humorous and metaphorically sound.
No,
with any medical experiment, they don't work sometimes.
I know, but these come around, like, who was the first person to eat lobster? You know what I'm saying? Maybe it was that cliff diver who buried his face in 4 feet of sand after diving off the Acapulco cliff. But I guess Pat is asking, who figured this one out? This one seems semi-far-fetched.
I wasn't around then, but look at this headline.
Drew has something that says, tongue piercing linked to brain abscess.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Starting to see some really nice side effects from piercings.
All right. We're going to take ourselves a little break. I'm going to yell at Pat O'Brien about that cliff diving comment. And
that's pretty good, actually.
No, it was solid. And you know what? That's when there wasn't much on TV. And when football season was over and baseball season wasn't happening.
None of it was sports and none of it was spectacular.
Right. They would go to Acapulco, Mexico, the cliff diving. But I always remember who would announce that thing? The guy.
Hi, everybody. Brett Musburger.
No, the guy with the world's biggest comb over.
Jackson? Jim McKay.
Jim McKay,
yeah.
And a Wide World of Sports. And they even had a Timex watch commercial for the Acapulco cliff diver. All right, we'll take ourselves a little break, and we'll be right back. Hey, everybody, Loveline. I'm Adam. That's Dr. Drew. Pat O'Brien is our guest tonight. You know him from Access Hollywood and from being Pat O'Brien. Being on TV for all those millions of years, and I don't mean that in a bad way.
You don't?
But I really don't. Just being Pat O'Brien.
I miss Pat doing baseball.
Yeah.
I did baseball for a while.
Yeah.
Did 4 great years of World Series and stuff.
What is the hardest sport to call? Is it basketball, hockey?
No. The second...
Curling.
Curling is, by the way, I fell in love with curling at this last Olympics.
I watched it on TV and got into it, by the way.
Yeah. I did all the I hosted all the curling matches in the afternoon on NBC.
Bring that up.
Tennis, the hardest thing about sports are the names. The hardest is the names.
Right.
So the first weekend of like a U.S. Open, where you're stuck with all the names that you have no idea who they are.
And everyone's from the Czech Republic.
Right, and the Slobodan Zinovinovic and those kinds of people. And then the Olympics, the Summer Olympics with every single bad name in the world. And my theory has always been, look, whatever I say their name is,
is what it is.
Is what it's going to be for the rest of the Olympics. I don't mean that in a smug way. I mean,
Zhang Zhang.
But somebody once asked me, what are you going to do with Slobodan Zinovinovic? And I said, he'll be the big left-hander for the rest of my life. And the big left-hander, you know.
Right.
But tennis is hard just for the names. The hardest sport...
But tennis only has 2 guys, I mean, during the match.
Before.
Right? Or... possibly 4 if it's not doubles.
Now, to call it, if you're hosting the tennis match, you've got to go through all the scores and names. That's the hardest.
Right, that's
if you're calling the match, it's the easiest one. The easiest sport to call is golf, because you know why?
Mm.
Okay, you're my announcer. I'm the producer, okay?
Right.
You've probably never covered a golf match.
No.
All right, we're doing the Masters right now, right?
All right.
Okay, you're on TV. I'm not.
Right.
So you can only hear me. Adam, it's Tiger at 15.
Tiger is at 15. Well,
this is for a birdie.
He's going for birdie. He's mulatto, or well, he's actually Black Asian. And then,
now this suddenly becomes best of show.
Right. Yeah. In your ear, they say, you know, they say Tiger for birdie, and you say Tiger for birdie.
It's got to be perfect.
So it's so easy.
There's a snot hanging out of your nose. There's snot hanging out of Tiger's nose. I would, that's what I need in life. Just for driving, for
someone
for
in your
parties,
ear.
Everything. Right. Everything. Oh, that sounds great. But, you know, to me, hockey seems to be the worst because if all these guys with these crazy names, and they got some serious names in hockey. Mm-hmm.
Right.
There's no Bob Smith in hockey. There's these crazy long names. And the puck's just flying around all over
and
the place.
And the guy's piling in and out. You can't even keep a track.
Right, the guy's jumping over the boards and coming back in the game. Do you have, now you have spotters.
Yeah, you have spotters
things, right?
And people pointing at wide receivers. And like in football, as soon as the pass is thrown, as soon as it's caught, someone points to a name.
Oh, I see. That's how
that's
it works.
Name, yeah.
So it wouldn't work for them to say it in your ear kind of thing.
No, not that one. In those sports, and in basketball, is almost you get an appreciation for what Chick Hearn does. Because in basketball, it's, you know, Michael Jordan brings the ball up, pass it, inside, you know, you got to keep talking. Basketball radio is ridiculous.
Right. Okay?
Now, I had a friend who could do tennis radio. Can you imagine that?
Mm. No. No, it all sounds very
difficult. Did you do radio for
me?
Yeah, I mean, I do radio now. I do some sports radio in the morning.
Did you start radio?
I started at KSOO in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. In fact, you have 20 seconds of that. Everybody wanted their own DJ show, you know. But we had to rerun Twins games at night because we're, you know, near Minnesota. And so I would... And I had no heritage in sports at the time. And the sports I knew was the Harlem Globetrotters coming to the city once a year. And I would say, this is the first time I've publicly admitted this, the game would be on in tape. And like the third inning, I would roll the tape up to like the sixth inning just so I could get my radio show on earlier.
Right.
I thought it didn't matter. So Halsey Hall would say, and the score is 3-1 Twins. Bottom of the third.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden you call out a commercial. Top of the sixth, 7-2. And I thought it didn't matter. The lights would be, you know, blasting out like that. But I got my show on, you know, my Bobby Darin records on earlier.
True, you know Bobby Darin is?
Sure, I had a crush on him when I was 14.
Jared?
What's up, Adam?
You're 17?
Yeah, first, Adam and the butt kissing. I saw your clip from Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. It was on a special collector's edition DVD thing.
Oh, yes, I was...
The FBI agent.
Yes, I was cut out of that movie, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Oh, good.
I liked it a lot.
I was a little bit worried, you know...
that it had been cut out because it just totally sucks?
No, I figured it sucked it, to a certain degree, or they wouldn't have cut it out. But I did Jay and Silent Bob... Strike Back, and I got cut out of the movie and put on the DVD, but cut out of the movie. Then I did another movie a few months ago. It's called, like, Frank McCluskey CI or something.
Yeah, I'm in that.
Are you in that?
Yeah, I'm the Olympic announcer when he gets to the Olympics.
I'm one of the detectives in this movie.
We're in a movie together, Drew.
Oh, right, Pat.
Wow.
Another bottle of wine coming your way.
$85.
Well, this will be less because Kimmel won't be with me. But here's the point. They called like 3 weeks ago and they're like, hey, we need to schedule an ADR session, meaning where you sit in this big sound stage or big sound room, and you watch yourself up on the screen and you do some looping work
with
you correct things
voice.
That don't come out too good, right? So for like 2 weeks, they're like, we need to schedule this. And then all of a sudden, it sort of fades away. And I say to my assistant, hey, what about the ADR work for Frank McCluskey? And they're like, they called. They don't need it anymore. And I thought, Jesus Christ, I'm cut out of another movie, aren't I? So isn't that what that means,
couldn't
right?
Have anything to do with the great attitude you have in terms of working for these people.
How dare you, Drew?
No.
So you're not in this movie?
I don't know.
It's supposed to be very funny.
They pay me $10,000. They got to keep me in it because the Jane's Silent Bob didn't pay me anything. So you couldn't cut out a guy you gave $10,000 to, could you?
Depends on.
You only got $10,000?
Depends on how much he sucked.
Pat, come on, seriously.
Did you get the trailer, too, or no?
Oh, yeah, I did get the trailer.
My assistant had craft services.
Jared?
All right, now to the psychological question.
What's up?
Yeah.
Right,
My girlfriend, she likes to take it up the ass, and she wants to do this, and I don't
know. No, yeah, come on, Jared, you're 17.
All right, and
during the middle of it, she makes me pull out, right when I'm about to come.
Yeah?
And
No.
Yes.
No.
Yeah, she wants to do this. And then she makes me stick an 8.
Oh, no. I don't even know what he's saying, but I know it's no.
Yeah.
It's got to be no.
No, yeah.
The answer's no, right?
Yeah.
It's got to be a no.
It's just got to be no. Jesus Christ.
Just listen to Jared's voice. Just think of that voice for a second. No.
No. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's,
No, it's good to press.
You don't want to talk to any methadone freaks, do you?
I'm going to go to break.
You do, Drew? You got to go pee?
Yes.
I ate asparagus tonight, Drew.
Let's go.
Drew loves my asparagus urination.
It's very,
I'm happy for both of you.
It's a disaster.
It's impressive. It's truly impressive. Yeah, it's worth witnessing. It's not to be forgotten.
Just turn into birdcage after 11, or what, is, what happens here?
Pat O'Brien is our guest tonight. We will take ourselves a quick break. We'll be right back after this. Hey, everybody, it's Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Drew over there. Pat O'Brien is our guest tonight. Pat, you know, from Access Hollywood. And it is on, it's on different times all over the country, is it not?
In most cities, it's on Access Time, which is 7:30 on the, both coasts and 6:30 in Central. But it's syndicated, so a lot of places will have it, like maybe at 5:30 or 4:30. Some people run it as a late-night show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like 11 or 11:30.
I never get enough of that show.
Thank you.
I really don't. When it's on, and I always seem to be in my kitchen.
Yeah.
When the show is on, because it's the little break between the man show and this show, and I'm in the kitchen digging through the refrigerator, and there's Pat. Filling me in on what's going on with Nicole Kidman.
A lot of very young people watch our show, too. When I go to these concerts, like the K-Rock Acoustic Christmas, 14 and under watch.
Interesting.
Well, I would imagine there's not many 14-year-olds in this city that don't think they're going to be involved with show business in one level or another at that tender age. Drew, I know when you were 14, you wanted to be a rabbi. Yes, no, what do you want to be at 14? A cantor.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
One of them...
One sings.
One of them sings.
That's right.
Drew wanted to sing opera. And Pat, now what... Now, you do radio, you do Access Hollywood, but you do sports radio. But what about, I don't know, late-night television or something? What are your plans?
Well, we'll find out, won't we? My contract's up this summer, so we'll see what happens. Mm. But I like what I'm doing now. I'm sure it's not the last job I have, and I'm sure there's jobs out there I don't know about that'll be created in the next 10 years.
Well, like the way
all
he
of
thinks.
Us don't
that,
know.
Wouldn't it be nice to think like that?
Right.
That are going to happen to me. I know that I'll have my fastball 10 years from now, so I'm not worried about that.
Always.
And there are no men and very few women who are really any good coming up, because we lost an entire generation of broadcasters in the '80s. By kids who had a decent voice and were decent looking. This is a lesson for you boys and girls out there, who took the shortcut and went right to being a reporter or an anchor.
Right.
And now they're doing porn. They went to be reporters or anchors and couldn't hack it because they didn't learn the business. They didn't get coffee for you, or they didn't have a production assistant. They didn't learn how to write. They just looked pretty, and they were on the air for a year, and someone said, get the hell out of here. We lost an entire generation of people. And that's why people like Regis Philbin and me and Matt Lauer and you will all work forever, because we have a heritage in the business. We know what's going on.
Interesting.
So, Drew, you get to work as long as I say it's okay for you to work. Do you hear that?
If I get you coffee and write for you.
That's right. Don't take any shortcuts.
Didn't Carson Daly used to?
Oh, Jesus. Carson Daly was... Jimmy met Carson Daly as like a... Carson was like 11 or something. And he met him in Hawaii.
Wow, is there some problem we should know about with Jimmy?
And he likes the young lads, yeah. And he was talking to Carson about the Fox, the guy, fastest beer drinker in the world, who was on the first season of The Man Show. And Carson's father used to be in like a fraternity that went to go hang out with the Fox. And Jimmy immediately locked on to this, and it turned out that Carson lived in Palm Springs or something, and then Jimmy went to Palm Springs to do radio when he was 19 and looked up Carson, and Carson was like his lackey when he was like 15. Crazy story, but Jimmy basically got Carson Daly
into
radio.
Yeah, I remember K-Rock. I used to go
I was his guest a couple times when he was up in San Jose at KYME.
That's right. Yeah. That's the affiliate. All right. So, and Pat, you know what I wanted to ask? What is your schedule over there at Access Hollywood? I mean, what time do you tape? What time do you show up?
I get up around 5 in the morning, 4:45. I do a 6:30 radio show for about a half an hour across this great country road.
You do it from your house? You have
do it from the house.
ISDN line?
Zephyr and all that kind of stuff.
Wow.
Then I arrive at work at like 7:30. Because I'm involved in the show.
Right.
We tape. We have to hit the satellite. In other words, the show, some of it has to be done by 1 o'clock. Because there are some cities that take it live at 4 on the East Coast.
Right.
And we're done at 1:30. And then, like today, I went and interviewed Tommy Lee. And, you know, there's always something to do in the afternoon besides play golf or whatever.
Well, like, I noticed.
And on the weekend, there's premieres and junkets and that sort of thing.
I noticed watching your show yesterday that you had the Dudley Moore passing on your show, but not the Milton Berle passing on your show, which suggested to me that you taped, you know,
earlier
obviously
today.
Dudley Moore had passed by then, but Milton hadn't.
We might have been able to update the Milton Berle tape, but we didn't. It came at a late enough time where to update it would have been a massive restructuring of what goes on there.
And
we made up for it today.
Billy Wilder for tomorrow.
Yeah, Billy Wilder comes in 3. We were talking about saying who's going to be the third one.
Right. Maya?
Yeah.
You're 18?
Yeah.
What's up?
I had a question about Dr. Drew. He was mentioning something about tongue piercings and it affecting your brain, if I heard correctly.
Well, no, this is one case I brought in that was in San Francisco where this woman had a moderate reaction after her piercing, a little bit of drainage, and she came back 2 weeks later with a bad headache and sort of confused. They did a CAT scan, and she had a huge abscess in her brain. And the patient underwent a suboccipital craniotomy with aspiration and drainage of purulent fluid from the cerebellar lesion.
Yeah.
Isn't that nice?
That damn thing.
True, that ain't USA Today, is it?
No, it's a medical.
No, I know, because those stars
not in
wouldn't
color.
Know what he was saying. Right.
It's not in color.
And what does that mean? What did they have to cut into it?
In her brain, and then basically pop the zit in her brain. Drain it out.
Good times. Why, Maya, you thinking about getting a piercing?
I actually got mine done for my 18th birthday, and the fluid that's leaking out of it, you know, they told me that it was all normal and it's just part of the healing process, but I'm hearing all these just rumors about all this stuff that, you know, can be caused from tongue piercings.
Well, it's not rumors.
It makes me wonder.
There aren't rumors. There's a lot of things. You're putting a foreign body through a sterile space near your brain, and that things can happen, near your airway as well. And for the most part, people get through it just fine. But, of course, things are going to happen.
So I heard that once you do that, am I wrong, that your body thinks, it obviously knows it's a foreign object and tries to devour it. And that's why you have so much more saliva. Is that true?
It's interesting.
I don't know. They mean they continue to produce more saliva?
Yeah, and that's it's trying to produce saliva to break it down.
Right.
So
swallow
it.
Sure.
Whatever happens.
Sure.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Really, is that...
Why would I hear that?
I don't know, but how... I hate to sound old, especially on this radio show, but how necessary is the barbell through the tongue, kiddies? I mean...
It's a sexual thing, right, at some point?
Yeah, but have you ever spoken to someone who went, oh, that made all the difference? Made it so much more worthwhile? No, you never will.
No.
It really is. It's a projection. It's, hey, I'm open for business. I'm into this stuff, is what it's saying. It's projecting that to the world. And it's also sort of an aggressive kind of a posture, but it doesn't do anything functionally for anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, and as a guy, you're saying, I give good oral. And as a girl, you're saying...
Same thing.
You're open.
Yeah.
Open for business. Jill?
Yeah.
You're 34?
Uh-huh.
Your boyfriend's a methadone addict?
Oh, well, we both are, but we're weaning ourselves from that. I mean, I know that's a problem. It's not a problem right now, but the reason I called is that he's been having rectal bleeding for a few weeks now, and he's kind of reluctant to go to the doctor. And He doesn't have any external hemorrhoids, but...
Well, it can be polyps and tumors and diverticuli as well. And the thing is, the reason he's not going, he's afraid they're going to take the methadone away from him.
Oh, no, he's not. We've both been to doctors, and I know they don't take it away.
Well, methadone addicts have a pathological fear of withdrawal. Why else wouldn't he go get checked out?
I think he's afraid of what it could be.
Okay, well
no one's a big fan of the ass checkup, Drew.
Well, do you think they would give him like a sigmoidoscopy? Yeah,
absolutely. He has to have one.
He doesn't have a regular doctor. Would he go to like a GP first?
He could. He needs to be, that's probably how it would work, but he can go directly to a gastroenterologist if he wants.
Hey. Okay, so he doesn't need a referral.
Nope.
Jill, how's the weaning off the methadone going?
That's none of your business.
It's hard.
Yeah.
You got to get in the program, Jill. People do not stay clean without that. Doesn't happen.
Well, how do you get what form do you take the methadone in? Is it liquid?
Well, they dissolve a tablet in liquid.
And how often do you need to take one?
Every day.
Just once a day?
Yeah.
At the beginning of the day?
Yeah.
And then can you just go to work?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Are you on a 21-day taper?
No, I'm on maintenance.
So you're not tapering, you're on maintenance.
No, I am tapering on maintenance.
Well, how many milligrams are you at now?
I'm on 50.
Okay, so don't kid yourself. You're on maintenance, and that's fine. They'll just be on maintenance. That's fine.
Well, I don't intend to stay on it for the rest of my life.
I understand
life.
That, but right now you're on maintenance.
Oh, thank you very much.
All right. Hey, Jill?
Yeah?
Yeah, so how different is the methadone feeling from the heroin feeling?
To me, I don't like the feeling. It makes me kind of drowsy,
mm-hmm.
but it takes away the sickness.
Right.
But some people actually feel a high from it.
And are you able to function? Can you work?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I thought you meant sexually.
No.
That tends to be blocked, though, the sexual functioning.
That's all right.
Well, it's not blocked completely, but I feel less sensitive.
Right. What do you do for a living?
I'm a florist.
It's always funny.
Huh?
Whatever the occupation is when you're on methadone, it sounds funny.
Oh.
Working with kids is always the best, but florist is good. I could see you doing that as someone who was high on methadone.
It's actually a very, during the seasons that it's busy, you know, like Valentine's Day and
right.
Mother's Day. It's, it's hard work.
Doing the florist trade. But what about, it's hard work. 2 days out of the year so far, but what about the rest of the time? Just gay guys coming in, looking for arrangements.
I have a question. Can I ask a question about the methadone?
Yeah.
Why don't you intend to stay on the methadone
forever?
Yeah, that's what you've committed yourself to that. By getting on methadone, it is exceedingly difficult to get off it. The state your brain is in is profoundly altered when you come off it, and it is that way for many, many, many months. That's the way you commit yourself to when you go on methadone. You're really committing yourself to a permanent situation.
Jill, let's focus on my question.
Well,
it's
kind of too late at this point, isn't it?
But I think you ought to really think in terms of staying on it, or you're going to have to make a long-term commitment, a several-month commitment to getting off it.
It has been.
Stop talking, please. Yeah. Jill, how much do they jack up the roses, for instance, on Valentine's Day?
Oh, a lot.
Really?
They're 1995 now.
Right.
Yeah.
A dozen. And then they're 120. It's my birthday, by the way.
Oh, it is? Valentine's Day. Did you get my roses?
I got your wine.
Good wine, yeah.
Yeah, please.
And then it's 120 or something like
that.
Yeah,
they at least 100%.
Really? Lots of gouging. And Mother's Day, about the same?
Yeah. Uh-huh. But that's the only way they can make any money.
Right.
Really.
Yeah. And how do you do it? You go downtown and buy all the stuff at like 4:30 in the morning and bring it back every day? Oh, that just sounds like a horrible, horrible job.
I think it sounds kind of... florist would be a good job.
Yeah, I don't...
flowers all day, and people are usually in a good mood when they come in.
Smells
I
nice.
Want to know how you get on methadone, seriously. So let's say I'm a heroin addict.
Go to methadone clinic. You have to go to a licensed methadone facility.
Get yourself a methadone maintenance man, as JT once said.
Yeah.
Can't they do any better than that?
Yeah.
Than what?
Methadone. I mean, you're not.
What is methadone?
Methadone is a long-acting heroin, basically. Okay. It's a long-acting opiate. And there's the pendulum swings back and forth in the addiction field between a strategy which would be called harm avoidance versus remission therapies, remission treatments.
What would happen to me if I took methadone now, being not a drug addict?
You would feel very drowsy. It would disorient you. You'd be sort of sedated. And if you used it more than a couple of weeks, coming off it would be very, very uncomfortable, but you'd have not a big problem coming off.
Would he get addicted to it?
Oh, it's profoundly addictive. It's the most addictive drug of all.
Methadone.
It's the hardest drug to come off, period.
Hmm. Right. So that's the thing that's sort of...
Do people abuse it? Do they take...
Yeah, like, they do.
Get a hold of it and not do heroin, just go to the...
Well, I've never seen... You know, people that taper off methadone always chip heroin. Always. And people that stay on maintenance, like this one, they will often go up to 80, 100, 120 milligrams until they're completely, you know, having no affect and they're, you know, no desire, no drive to get high. And then they're kind of okay, but they're also impaired. They don't go through life normally.
I've done a lot of train spotting in my day.
But the deal is, though, that the problem is that heroin treatment is, there was so much recidivism and so much death associated with heroin, people are saying, well, at least they live for 20 years on methadone. So it's rational to use methadone.
Right. But also, we could just cut their heads off and freeze them, couldn't we?
I mean, someday.
Hook them up to some sort of support system or some monitoring.
Next to Walt Disney.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Will?
Yeah.
You're 15?
Yep.
What's up?
Well, I'm kind of, like, shy, and I have depression. And I take Zoloft for that. I know it's kind of like one of the symptoms of it, but I'm just wondering what I can do to kind of build my confidence so I can, like, initiate.
Well, what do you do? Do you do anything well?
I'm smart, I guess. I don't really do any sports or skateboard.
You skateboard?
Yeah.
Are you, so you're good in school?
Yeah. Well, I don't get good grades, but I'm pretty smart.
Yeah.
So I don't turn anything in.
You don't turn anything in?
Yeah. Kind of lazy and procrastinate.
Depressed.
I see. You're just one of these a-holes that announces that you're smart, but you don't really give anyone any conclusive evidence to back that up.
Hey, that's you.
Yeah,
that's
Adam,
me.
That's you. How about that?
I pronounce I'm a genius every once in a while, but yet there's no documentation of it whatsoever. No SAT scores, no IQ tests,
well,
nothing like that.
You did that all the way through high school, and you were getting the D's and F's, too.
No, I declared I was a retard in high school and backed it up.
So, Will, you want to talk to girls? Is that it?
Yeah.
Your problems are over. You listen to girls. Yeah. You don't talk to them.
Well, I mean, I can't really, like, initiate a conversation. Like, once I start talking to them, I'm fine, but, like, unless they come up to me, I don't talk to them.
I remember that. It's hard, right?
Yeah.
For everybody. I don't think it's a singular problem.
It's even hard just, like, talking to other guys, too.
Like, you can't. You have social phobia. You can't talk to anybody.
Yeah.
Well, what do you like besides not turning in assignments? Do you have any other hobbies?
Not really.
I mean, do you like any bands, music?
No. Like, into alternative rock and stuff.
Yeah. Seems to me, as a person... If you're young and you're having difficulty meeting other people and you have sort of a social phobia, you find something that you're into and you start getting into it, and then you start running into other people that are into it. It makes it much easier.
Develop a relationship around
it.
Yeah.
And you find out that there's a whole lot of people just like you.
Right.
Absolutely.
And really, social phobia is one of those things that if you put yourself out there repeatedly and develop some skills, the phobia settles down a little bit. It's okay to use pharmacological interventions, but if you don't go out there and take the risks and develop the skills and fall on your face a few times, you never will.
Right. Yeah, and here's the thing, too, Will. Yeah, you got to work at it a little bit. I guess that's what Drew's saying. I mean, it's all right to take your lumps. You just have to sort of get out there.
Yeah.
I know it seems to you that it comes very easily to all the popular people, but at some point, maybe even currently, they were out there taking their lumps, too. So you just have to be willing to take your lumps.
Well, one of the things that helps you is to have a secure base, some attached relationships that are healthy and places you can go to refuel and sort of spout your anxieties and spill your anxieties onto somebody whom you trust and feel close to. So it really, you know, friends become a real good source of renewal and refueling. So building a base of friends is an important part of this whole process.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, good times, everybody.
All right.
All right, listen, you're 15. Start, you know, pop some sits and start beating off, would you?
Okay.
Start sounding like a 15-year-old.
Well, your two favorite pastimes, Adam. I mean,
yeah.
It's great. And napping, of course.
Skateboarding. Are you a good skateboarder?
Oh, hold on. Yeah, back. You good, Will?
What?
You good at the skateboarding?
I'm kind of good. I'm not, like, great, but...
Yeah.
Do toe flips and double toe flips.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
Pat has a ramp in his backyard. Do you not?
Yeah.
Jesus, I am so jealous of Pat's
You love Sean's
John.
Life, don't you?
Oh, my God. My God. You ever wander into Pat's courtyard at his house?
In the back?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I go back there when I go to one of Pat's parties.
Yeah.
Pick a Swedish meatball or two out of one of the hot trays in the back he sets up. He has all the keeps all the Mexicans in the second garage.
Oh, really?
It's the Lynn O'Brien's operation.
Not just for the party. I mean, he keeps them there.
Of course.
I see him there. There's hay on the floor.
Yeah.
AM radio. He keeps them there. They're chained to the space heater.
I'm still laughing at the look on your face when she said she was a florist.
So I go back there, and I walk in the back of Pat's house, and there's skateboard ramps and dune buggies, and I mean dirt bikes. And then Pat has a whole gymnasium in there with the big pictures of Michael Jordan and Universal workout machines, and I think, oh, that son of a bitch. Not you, Pat, your kid.
Right.
That son of a bitch, Sean. Look at him in this big house running around. He's got Heather Locklear taking a dump in the upstairs bathroom, and Richie Sambora's downstairs smoking a cigarette, and there's Jimmy from The Man Show getting drunk in the backyard.
Playing with the fart machine.
Playing with the fart machine. What a life this kid has. Does he thank you? He should
knows
thank
it.
You.
No, he knows.
Does he know?
He knows it. He thanks me. You
all
know,
right.
Sean.
I know, but I don't know if he knows. He
no,
should
he
know. Jesus.
On Adam's behalf.
He's got a dune buggy back there. It's crazy, Drew.
I know.
And skateboard ramps.
Adam's greatest drama in life was that no one in his life could offer him anything because they were all losers.
Right. I grew up with a family
North
of
Hollywood
losers.
Ever.
Yes. Oh, horrible, horrible losers. Horrible. I had like a shopping cart to play in. That was my dune buggy.
One of the reasons we have all that stuff is, A, we can, and B, the way I grew up just like you. My father made about
$80.
My father made about $80 a week.
Yeah.
And we would have, payday was Thursday, and we would have great meals on Friday. That's why I don't eat leftovers to this day. And then we'd have a nice meal maybe on Sunday, and then leftovers the rest of the week.
I cannot eat
leftovers.
Pat grew up like Elvis. He grew up, where'd you grow up?
Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Yeah.
That Sioux Falls is in Iowa.
No, it's the Sioux City.
That's Sioux City, okay.
Dirt floors.
Well, I mean, it wasn't that bad.
Well, Pat was drunk when he was telling me. Maybe I was drunk when I was listening, but it was pretty good. You know, it's always nice once in a while when I run into one of my buddies and we have a pour-off,
right.
You know, where I'm like, yeah, my mom was on food stamps, and they're like, yeah, my mom was an alcoholic who...
And it always ends, but we always had everything we needed, and we were happy.
Drew had it worse. Drew's dad had money, but he was so goddamn cheap, he never gave Drew any money, and it screwed him up even worse. To this day... This guy goes out and buys a mop. He's got to stand in front of it for an hour and 45 minutes deciding whether that $11 right. is too much.
So I don't know which is better.
No, Drew's worse. You know why? Because we're happy now, and Drew's a mess. Right, Drew?
I'm a mess.
That's right.
But I just like buying things.
Oh, that kid of yours, though. He just as long as he appreciates
it,
I'm okay.
No, he's fine.
I'm all right with that.
He's fine.
All right. We'll take ourselves a little break. Pat O'Brien is our guest tonight. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. It is Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Pat O'Brien is our guest tonight. You know him from Access Hollywood. And when we left off, we weren't talking to Jessica, were we? But I saw 36 Double D up there, and I thought, yes. Jessica?
Hello.
Ooh. Got that little girl voice.
Hi.
What's up there, baby?
I was just wondering, like, the side effects of breast reduction.
What's up with that little girl voice?
What happened
first?
To you? What happened, Jessica?
Nothing.
No molestation?
No, none of that.
No abuse?
Uh-uh.
All right.
But he was really sweet.
All right.
Nothing.
36 double D?
Yeah.
5'3", 135?
Uh-huh.
Let me do some radio math there.
No, that's exactly it.
Okay. So 5'3", 135, 17 years old.
Yeah.
36 double D.
And, like, I don't know, it's really awkward because, like, I wasn't like that, like, a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's how the breasts work.
But it's something you may not feel so uncomfortable with a couple of years from now. And so now, of course, it's uncomfortable and awkward, and you wear big sweaters and try to hide what, you know, the shape of your body. And that's a common reaction that women have to this kind of thing. And guys, of course, treat you like hell, and the girls treat you badly, too, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute.
No, the women think, oh, she's so this. They talk that she's slutty, she's this.
Oh, women are horrible,
yeah.
Horrible creatures.
And guys
are much worse than guys.
And guys.
They abuse anyone who's better looking than they are.
Right. And guys just, unfortunately, they can't control their eyes. They will not look you in the face anymore. They're looking at your chest. When
I know, but I've argued this many, many times. What is so different between a breast, an ass, a breast, and some legs, or even a breast and a nice smile?
I understand. You're defending your taste, and that's fine.
No, it is not the personality.
Yes, I understand.
I mean, why is it so? What is so? What is the word I'm looking
offensive
for here, Drew?
Or troubling?
Yeah, I wasn't looking for any of that. But why is a woman objectified? If there's a very beautiful woman who has beautiful eyes and beautiful bone structure in her face, and she's modest, she has a modest chest, then there's no harm in looking at her, commenting on her, and lusting after her. There's no problem in that.
You know,
even if you've never spoken a word to her, but if she has a large chest and you're attracted to the woman's large chest, and all of a sudden you're a pig,
yeah,
or a scumbucket.
You know what?
And she should feel very badly about herself, because it's, after all, it's not her ass or her slender nose we're attracted to.
The reason is that we from early infancy learn to resonate with people's faces as a representation of their internal states. Their eyes, their expressions, that is who they are. That's how we learn to sort of empathize with what's going on in another human being.
So the ugly women are mean?
No, it's how we put ourselves in other people's psychic worlds.
Yeah, but we know women that are very nice who are 17 who have a mustache that no guys want to talk to.
I understand that, but that's where this sort of bias comes, is that
it's a bias, and
the body is pure sex. That's purely about sexual drive.
Yeah, but it's more than just the body. If a woman has beautiful legs, it's not that big a deal.
I think breasts not in, though, is that?
No, Adam is really into that, and he's busy defending himself all the time against that.
I'm just saying, a woman calls up a 17-year-old girl or whatever age and says, I have a large chest, and Drew says, you poor dear. It must be horrible for you to have guys look at you that way.
I didn't say that.
But
do we know people
are
mean to her?
Well, guys, listen, I don't want to be cruel, but it may be the only thing she's got going for. Like Uncle Milty and his penis. I mean, you know, that was the only thing Milty had going for.
But the point
for,
I was
sexually
trying to get, Jessica, is that, Jessica, it's a surgery, you're going under the knife, there's the risks of anesthesia and bleeding and infection and bad outcome cosmetically. What feels so uncomfortable now may not feel so uncomfortable in a couple of years, is the point I'm trying to make.
Okay.
You got to hang in with this,
and it shouldn't ruin you.
Huh.
I mean, it can be an issue in your life, but
are people making fun of you?
Well, like, not really to my face, but
well,
like,
then who cares?
But in some of my classes, like, that's how people will like refer to me, like, oh, you know, the girl with the big boobs.
Yeah, well, that's how it is.
But you know what? Everybody, I was made fun of so much because I was really skinny.
Right.
I mean, I was rail job and, you know.
I had it for my superhuman intellect. People would say Mr. Intellect.
Right.
Yeah, it was tough. And I had huge arms, you know, huge arms. And a really tight ass. And piercing blue eyes.
Okay.
That's why people made fun of me. Jessica?
Yeah.
All right, but listen here, baby.
We think there's something else.
There's a lot of women that spend a lot of money to get their boobs made to look like yours every year. And being known for having an outstanding body feature that would be considered good As a matter of fact, I subscribe to a couple of magazines that are solely dedicated to that part of the woman's anatomy. This shouldn't be the worst thing in your life.
But it's, like, not just that, like, I have to, like, it's hard for me to, like, find bras and, like, wear cute clothes and stuff like that.
Right. And someday you may want to do something, but at 17, I would just give it a little time first.
Nice rack.
And you're sure there's nothing else going on, though, because we picking up and have picked up since we first started talking to you that you sort of...
You sound broken.
Yeah, something happened to you earlier. Your parents split up or something?
No, they're still together 18 years.
All right.
And no one's alcoholic and no physical abuse or anything?
No, we're Jewish, so they're not like that.
True. Why do the Jews have the big cans? Why is that? Big schnoz, big brain, big cans. What is that with the Jewish women? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I did not until this minute. But
is that where we're going to go with big schnoz? Is that what you think on the holiday season?
Adam just always immediately goes to the highbrow humor. Right. Don't worry.
Well, no, I mean it. The Jewish women seem to be a little chestier than other breeds. Would you agree with that?
I guess so.
I'll the other thing I've noticed about the Jews is, to me, a disproportionate number of dark-haired Jewish people have blue eyes.
Huh.
Have you noticed that? Have you Drew, are you screwing with me?
I've not noticed any of this. I'm just listening to you.
Once in a while, Once in a while, you see a guy or a girl, but oftentimes a guy with dark hair and dark features and blue eyes, mm-hmm. and he's Jewish or green eyes.
Green.
And I noticed that a lot, and I'm always curious why that was.
Mm.
The guys I know who are Italian, who have dark hair, dark features,
I do.
Can't you just look at somebody? And
no, I got to know what you are.
So did you notice my
Mick,
eyes are hazel green?
Mick, all the way.
Jesus.
That's all I know about him. I don't even know. I just think Mick. Jimmy says we're going to Pat O'Brien's. I think he's talking about... that's in Mexico. I don't know what he's talking about. And then
Mick all the way.
Mick all the way.
And 24/7. Mick.
Yeah, I wanted to buy you some scotch.
I got
over
it. Gotcha.
$85 for the red wine. Jenna.
Hello.
You're 18.
Oh hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Good. Yeah, I had a question. I have a problem. I don't have a problem with like my sex drive, but when it comes to actually like getting really into sex, I don't know. I don't seem to be able to do it. And
you're
the
lesbian.
Reason that I think it's a problem, I used to just kind of think I just wasn't a particularly, like, horny girl, you know what I mean?
Right.
But what happened was I was on, like, some medication. I was on birth control, and then I was on some other kind of medication. And what happened was one time I was having sex with my boyfriend, and all of a sudden it was like something just clicked, and, like, I could just, like, totally let go, and it was like all of a sudden I could like relate to all those times when people talked about, you know, earth shattering sex and all this great stuff. And so I'm wondering if maybe it's just like, I don't know, like a hormone imbalance.
Well, certainly you're on birth control pills, right?
I was for a while. I'm not right now.
All right. Well, that can be something that suppresses your sex drive or alters your sex drive anyway.
Right. Because what happened was it actually triggered. Well, I don't know if it actually did, but it could have been a factor in.
All right.
Well, also you're 18, and that's the age that some people sort of turn the corner.
Women
sexually, yeah, women.
And then what was the medication you were on?
Well, it was actually Luprolide. I was on some fertility medication because I was an egg donor.
All right, well, Luprolide screws you up big time. I mean,
really?
Of course.
What does it do?
It basically induces menopause.
You're an egg donor at 18?
Yeah.
Why? For money?
Well, part of it's for money, yeah.
And you don't understand how much it screws with your system?
I don't really know, to tell you the truth.
That's crazy, Jenna, to get involved in these. I mean, these are extremely powerful medications.
Right.
You didn't look into this at all before you did this?
No, I looked into it. And I mean, I looked into, like, the dangerous side effects and things like that, but they didn't really talk about what it does to your sex drive. It's supposed to be kind of irrelevant because you're not really supposed to have sex when you're doing this anyway.
How much were the eggs?
$5,000.
$5,000. We talked to someone from Denver last night, $3,500.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
She said a little more expensive here in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You never date Milton Berle.
I'm in the middle of doing it right now, so.
Are you doing another cycle, or?
This was actually a couple weeks ago that happened. Right now I'm on some different fertility medications. I'm still on the Luprolide and then some Reprenex.
What I'm asking is, are you going to give eggs multiple times?
Well, it depends on how it goes. I mean, if it ends up being, you know, feeling kind of crappy after the surgery and it's not that great, then maybe not. But it's kind of a good idea. I'm kind of starting to, you know, wanting to save some money and maybe start a retirement plan and things like that. And it's a lot of money for, like, you know, one shot, and it's really easy.
Wow.
You know?
Jesus Christ.
Oh, doesn't sound...
Yeah.
Doesn't sound that easy, Jenna. It sounds like...
Well, I don't know. $5,000 for, you know, being sedated in it. I mean...
Yeah. I mean, as long as that part goes well. And it's kind of a nice thing to do for somebody else, too. You know what I mean?
Sort of. I mean, I don't want to turn it into a good thing, really. I'd rather focus on what's wrong with you. Yeah.
Of course.
And this is the beauty of being a woman. At 18, you're qualified to do nothing. I was making $50 a week doing gay porn, and here you are getting $5,000 for these eggs.
Yeah.
And Drew, you get a new set of eggs once a month, right? Is that how it works?
You can't go through this kind of thing every month.
I know, but you got plenty of eggs.
Yes, plenty.
She can do whatever she wants, and just as long as her eggs don't get fertilized with whatever semen eventually fertilizes her eggs, she doesn't have to worry about having some of her own kids running around. Just half a kid, right?
Right.
Half a kid, right?
But after taxes now.
How's that work?
You know what? And that's the thing is, I really wish that I could do this under the table, but they make you report it and everything, so I don't know what'll be it after taxes.
And do they? Do you take a test? They want to know how tall you are, that kind of stuff?
Yeah. You have to tell them all your genetic background. You have to talk to a genetic therapist. They have to do all these blood tests and make sure you don't have diseases.
Do they deduct a certain amount of points for being sort of hard up for cash that you'd want to sell eggs?
Yeah, I think they do. They make you talk to a psychologist, and she wants to know all your reasons for wanting to do it. And I think that if you just say, oh, I just want the money, I don't think that they'll let you do it.
Just give 400 pints of blood.
Right. Fantastic. All right there, Jenna. Hey, good times there, baby.
So the question is all about,
Well, you're on a whole bunch of hormones.
But forget about that. The only reason I mentioned that is because it made me kind of realize, like, oh, my God, this is what I've been missing. And so now that I think I'm just back to normal, like, is there something that I can do to get back there? I mean,
again, talk to the people, the fertility guys. There may be a birth control pill you can take that will sort of enhance this. Or at least you can find one that will help you.
And, Drew, what do they do? Do they take the egg and put it in their egg library?
I think they have.
Or do they have someone picked out for it already?
I think they are all picked out when they're harvesting them.
And you think they must see pictures of the person and all that?
Yeah, imagine.
Yeah. I mean, $5,000 sounds like a lot of money.
At 18, it sounds like a lot. And yet she could be menopausal at 26.
And it is, but then it's really 3, and then it's really 2.
Right. It's the same with taxes.
Yeah.
And her agent's getting a taste.
That's
right?
What I'm saying. It's really 2. And then you go out to dinner, and that's $500.
Do they know the long-term effects of harvesting these eggs?
Not really.
Because this has been going on for 10 years?
Yeah.
But I think they're assuming that it's safe.
Let's put it this way. I, as a physician, would flip out if my daughter were doing this, just in terms of her safety.
Right. But you won't even admit she has eggs.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. She doesn't have eggs now, does she? She's too young?
What are you talking about?
When do you get your first egg as a
How
girl?
How dare you?
And you get them in Easter? Period. All right.
So when they paid you this $10,000 for this movie, did you say to yourself, it's really 5, and then I do that all the time.
That's
how I talk myself out of things.
Oh yeah. No, listen, I would never leave.
Right.
I would never leave.
If I really don't want to do it, and they say, I'll make this up. They say we'll give you $10,000.
Right.
And then if I do want to do it, I'll figure, well, I'm getting $10,000. If I don't, I'll say, well, that's really 5. Then by the time I pay, it's 4. And then it's going back and forth. It's 3. And
right. No, it's brutal. But then at a certain point, don't you just have to do everything and make your money and sort of move forward? And even though you're getting paid $10,000 and you actually see $3,000, isn't it just sort of relative? $30,000 becomes $10,000. You know, whatever it is, it's just sort of relative. I don't even look at it as $10,000. I look at it as $3,000. That saves me. And I never give it my best effort. So I sort of feel like
don't appear in any of these movies.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. That's bad. No. No, who just...
He keeps getting asked to be in films.
Who'd I work with? It was really funny. Who's the Mexican guy? Just got his own sitcom.
George Lopez. Did very well. 10.2
million well.
People last night.
The promo was pretty funny. Oh, yeah. I got Pat O'Brien here. What do I need you for, Drew, asking about the Mexican? Me and George Lopez were partners in this Frank McCluskey CI movie that's coming out I think it's coming out in like 3 weeks or something like that.
It's on its way.
It's on its way. Pat is in it. He should know. And we shot the thing on a Monday, and I was a detective. I was detective number one, and George Lopez was detective number two. And we had a scene that had about 3 pages of dialogue, and I had about 80% of the dialogue of the 3 pages. Now, I naturally didn't even look at the script. I've gone from not reading the whole script. I used to just read my part. Right. Now I don't even read my part. I just figure I'm going to be in makeup so long, I'll take a look at it then and work it out. I showed up at the set. There's George Lopez, and he's got this woman with him. And meanwhile, I'm detective number one. I got 85% of the dialogue. And George introduced me to this woman. And I'm like, hey, how you doing? And then she leaves, and I'm like, who's that? She's like, George is like, it's my acting coach. I'm like, oh, what a coincidence. Is she? No, I brought her here. Well, why? We've been working on this. When? All weekend, he says to me. I'm like, on the script? The script? Yes.
Now, boy, is he pissed at you that the whole thing got cut out because of you.
But who's the joke on? George Lopez pays his acting coach and busts his ass the entire weekend. I show up. I eat 10 grand worth of food at craft service. It gets cut out. We both get the 10 grand.
Did you go down to the arena down there in South Central?
No, we shot it on the lot at Sony, right down the street.
See, I forget I'm in these movies. I was doing the Olympics.
Yeah, they come out a year later.
Yeah, I was in Big Fat Liar.
Oh.
And I'm at the Olympics, and I'm walking back to my hotel from the late night show, and all these kids are coming up saying, I just saw you on TV, or I just saw you at the movie theater. I'm thinking, what the hell?
You forgot.
I run into John Bon Jovi. Said, we were just watching you. And I forget.
Well, because they come out 9 months. Well, Drew, you wouldn't know because you don't do films like Pat and I do.
Well, I'm getting the clue.
Let me tell you the film world. It takes a while to develop the film.
Let me tell you the radio. Oh, nice.
And then,
walk in our shoes, baby.
Right.
Let me tell you the radio world. We have to take commercial breaks every once in a while.
Oh, right.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. We'll be back. Everybody, Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Dr. Drew. Wow, time flies when you're having fun. Pat O'Brien is our guest tonight. Access Hollywood is the name of his show. And let's see if we can squeeze in some more calls before the night is over. Monica?
Yes?
28. You have big breasts?
Yes, I do.
And what's the problem?
Well, I just, really had a problem with the comment about saying that they're not uncomfortable and thinking, I mean, I understand that the girl at 17, it is too young to have a breast reduction done.
Well, nobody said they weren't. They weren't uncomfortable.
Or that
but they won't be the worst thing later on. You know what? It is, though. And until you have to carry those things around, will you not know?
Yeah, you're breaking my heart, baby.
Am I?
What about my tremendous scrotum sack? That's a cross I have to bear. If you don't hear me complaining about it every day.
Well, but you know what? Is it so heavy down there that you just... constantly slouching over or, having a hard time sitting up straight, having problems with your back, having problems with your neck.
Well,
Monica.
Pulls me straight down like one of those Russian dancers.
But, Monica, those, what you're describing are indications for a reduction. A 17-year-old being disturbed with rumor that's circulating about her because of her body makeup is not an indication for a breast reduction. And so we were just advising her just to cool out and see how she felt about it in a few years.
Okay, and then I believe Adam was saying, well, what's wrong having big breasts?
I'm going to stare at this chick's boobs.
What's wrong having big boobs? What? You know what? That's, like, demeaning, and it's just makes people feel uncomfortable.
What is?
Saying that, oh, what's wrong with having big boobs? Well, just because you don't have big boobs and you can't play with your own boobs, it's like you're fascinated with women's, but still, it's like...
Well, Monica, you make quite a compelling point. Are you high?
No, actually, I'm at work right now.
Are you a trial attorney?
No, I'm not.
My God, it's like you're retarded.
I don't think so.
What is your point? I enjoy large breasts. You have large breasts. We should make quite a team.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what your problem... I don't know... Never met anyone who was angrier over having a nice set of rack. Nice rack. What's the problem? Well, I wasn't making derogatory terms.
They're
I was saying I.
Uncomfortable though. It's like.
Oh, big deal.
And what do you mean, big deal?
Well, look. What do you want, honey? Everything's uncomfortable. I got big eyebrows. It's tough. It's a tough life.
Yeah. Okay.
Actually, an eyebrow.
I'm Judge. Yes, actually, one large eyebrow.
Oh, really? You're unibrow.
Why are you so angry? Jesus Christ.
I'm not angry.
And when I was in high school, the women with the large breasts. I don't know how, if this just worked out. It wasn't because it's a sexual thing. They were the most popular women in my school.
Of course.
I'm going through the names right just now as we're thinking about it.
Hey, Monica, they're a mess today.
She's tracking.
Monica, what is up? What's up with you? How big are you up top?
Bigger than her.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say is that I am larger than her. And
Bouncy.
At her age, I was her size. And, of course, you know.
All
after
right.
childbearing as well, too, your breasts get larger.
Well, why don't you get a breast reduction?
And I'm working on that. It's just, you know, it's like, but, you know, you were right as far as her having to wait a while because, you know, they do say that you should wait.
Right.
So after you have kids and,
well,
you know, make sure that that's what you really want
to do. That's
what
we saw. Yeah, that enough. All right, shut up. Jesus Christ, all you retards that call this show. It's like we can't talk about anything that it's even close to you without you calling up with a beef. Just everyone shut up. We're not talking to you. What is that impulse? Drives me nuts. Somebody had a father who died from cancer. We can't talk about cancer without attacking their father somehow.
Yeah.
Someone has large breasts. We can't comment on large breasts. It's an attack on them. What are you guys? Is this like Cro-Magnon retard caveman night? What is that? You know, I mean, everyone has something going on, and understand people discuss it. We're not talking to you.
It's narcissism, and it's
that's what it is. It's like, I have large breasts. You told that girl that she should kill herself because her bra was too big. No, we said, look, you're 17. It's not the worst thing that could happen to a person. Give it a few years and see where it is. Don't get the surgery tomorrow. That's all we said to her, basically.
Yep.
Well, on the other hand, we're not carrying around large breasts, so we don't know.
No. I'll
take her side for a second.
I wish I was. I should be praised for my love of large breasts. I like large breasts. Whereas Drew likes a woman with a large right foot so she can stuff it up his ass. I mean, that's all I found out about Drew in the 7 years I've known him, that he likes to get his ass kicked around the house by his... that's why he got a bigger house.
More room.
He didn't have enough room to have his wife kick his ass around the house. He had to move into a larger square foot place. But I like big breasts, and I'm attacked by women who have big breasts. You go figure. Go figure. All right, we'll take a little break. We'll be right back. There's the show. I want to thank the great Pat O'Brien for coming in the studio tonight. Always enjoy seeing you, Pat. And trying to think what the date is. Well, we'll definitely see Pat at his next Christmas party.
December. Let's hope before then, huh?
Yeah. Give him a nice cheap bottle of wine.
Cheap, huh?
Trying to think about it. You like a Merlot?
No, a nice cab. What you brought last year, the $85.
Yeah. When Jimmy came out with those two bottles, $85 a piece, I almost went through the roof. Jesus Christ. All right, Pat O'Brien, everyone, Access Hollywood.
Good to see you, man.
Good to see you. Yes. And until next time, it's Adam Kroll for Dr. Drew saying, mahalo. I have large breasts.
This has been Loveline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or this station. The producer for Loveline is Ann Wilkins Ingold. Loveline is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.